This is an ABC podcast.
This is Baby Talk Podcast with Penny Johnston.
It should happen more often, but once a year we're called on to celebrate the lives of people who have an extra 21st chromosome in their lives. It's a genetic glitch that gives them a few characteristics that in the past have been seen as very negative. But here at Baby Talk, we're all for looking on the bright side as we meet parents who are willing to put themselves out to explain to you just how lovely it can be to share their lives with a child with Down syndrome. Elizabeth Cullinan is a busy, passionate mum, just like you or me, who has one of the funniest birth stories I've heard in a while. She also has a darling daughter, Greta, who you can see on our website. But I think, Elizabeth, I'm going to leave the introduction of your whole family to you.
So my husband and I have three children. We've got a pretty busy life. We have 8-year-old Jasper and 6-year-old Rory, so both boys at school, and 3-year-old Greta. Greta, she's been a surprise packet from the start, I think you would say. Her arrival into the world was very quick. We'd just been at the hospital for about 10 minutes and she made her way into the world and she was covered in meconium and the midwives were quite concerned that she might be ingesting some of that. So they were sort of around her mouth wiping the meconium away. And so it was left up to me to glance down at the other end. And I'm not sure what I saw, to be fair, whether it was a stray umbilical cord or people say that area can be a bit swollen soon after birth, but it was enough for me to announce, it's another boy. And so we named her Xavier John. And then we were moved up to the birth suite belatedly. She was swaddled up and my husband went to move the car and another midwife came on duty and we were sort of rearranging Xavier's wraps and I sort of looked a bit closer and she looked and I looked at her and I said, it's a girl. So my husband came back into the room a couple of minutes later. I was in hysterics saying, you'd better come and have a look over here. So Xavier quickly became Greta. And we were lucky it was the middle of the night, so we hadn't sent out an announcement by text yet, so we didn't have to have an awkward kind of correction.
What's going on? Don't you two know anything these days?
That's it. So, but we didn't know that she had another surprise in store for us. So yeah, Greta was really a model baby. She was the only one of my three kids to breastfeed without any trouble. She was a brilliant sleeper. When she started on solid, she was a great eater. She was just really engaging and content, and people would always say, you know, what a gorgeous baby. And she was developing really differently to her brothers. They both walked and crawled quite early. They were really, really active boys. And as a mum, you know, you try and not make comparisons. And I'd tell myself, you know, relax, of course all babies develop differently. She was walking just in time for her 18-month maternal child health nurse appointment. The nurse didn't raise any concerns. And so, you know, once she'd mastered the walking, I was waiting for her language to start to blossom. And when it didn't, like she had some words, but it just wasn't coming along as I would have expected, that's when I made an appointment with a paediatrician. And at that first appointment, he shared this suspicion with me that Greta might have mosaic Down syndrome. And I had never heard of mosaic Down syndrome.
Like a lot of us.
Yeah.
So, before we get to the next part of the story, I'm going to ask you to, if you don't mind, tell us what is mosaic Down syndrome?
Sure. So it's a rare form of Down syndrome, and about of the sort of whole Down syndrome population, about 1 to 2% of people will have this rare form. It means that some of a person's cells have the extra copy of the 21st chromosome and some of them have the typical number. So in the ordinary Down syndrome, every cell has the third copy of the 21st chromosome.
And so that would mean that some of the Down syndrome characteristics wouldn't be as obvious?
Not necessarily. It doesn't. There's a lot of unknowns, I think. And I think it's probably something that I've learnt. There are a lot of unknowns, and I found that difficult at the start to think, you know, how will this impact on her development? And no one could give us any answers. But what I came to realise pretty quickly is that it's the same for everyone, whether you've got 46 chromosomes, 47 chromosomes, whether some of your cells have 46 and some of your cells have 47, there are no guarantees. For the moment, I can say, you know, what it has meant for Greta is that her physical development has been a little bit slower and her speech has taken longer to develop. So what it means for her future, what she's going to be good at, what she might need some extra help with, you know, we don't know. But I don't know about that for my boys either. I've got no idea what their future strengths and weaknesses will be.
Really, the further you travel down that parenting journey, the more you realise that there is a whole lot of unknown for all of us as parents.
Absolutely.
With the mosaic Down syndrome, that's not something that you would have picked up during a pregnancy scan.
So, yeah, in our case, it wasn't. So I had the regular combined first trimester screening. So that's where there's the blood test combined with the ultrasound results, and that generates a figure, which is the chance that the fetus will have Down syndrome. That's often referred to as risk, but the preferred terminology there, and it's much less value-laden, is chance. So my results didn't come back as high chance. So we had a very sort of uncomplicated pregnancy. There were no decisions to make. And like a lot of parents who might find out the diagnosis prenatally or at birth, they could be just handed a list of potential problems. And that's the first meeting they have with their child, or that's the first way that they are getting to know their child. But that certainly wasn't the case for us.
I'm wondering whether that made it a little bit easier for you.
Well, the beauty of it was so it was just before her second birthday where her diagnosis was confirmed. So we had nearly 2 years just to get to know Greta as Greta. Her wider family did, her community that she lived in, her child carers. We didn't have this overlay of a diagnosis. So people often talk about person first language in Down syndrome community. And very literally for us, Greta came first, and then the diagnosis came nearly a couple of years later. And I often wonder what messages we might have been given if we did receive that diagnosis before birth.
Do you think it was slightly easier, an easier entry into that world for
you? Oh, absolutely. And I wouldn't change it. Like, there's definitely the sense that, you know, we might have missed some early intervention opportunities. But if I had to go back and have our time again, I think just having that sort of uncomplicated time and, as I said, sort of getting to know her without that overlay was how I'd like to do it again.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess I sort of think about, you know, I was, you know, I'm very positive now and I see a fabulous positive future with so many opportunities for Greta. But at the time of receiving that diagnosis in that paediatrician's office on that day, I was completely sideswiped. I'd never had a bigger shock in all my life. Yet I had this little girl, happy, healthy, loving life. Yes, a little bit slower with her speech, a little bit slower with her physical milestones, but loving life and spreading joy. But despite her standing there, I still felt this terrible shock and worry about her future. So that makes me think, if you receive that diagnosis pre-birth or just after birth where you're holding this tiny little bundle, how much more difficult it must be to sort of understand and get your head around those uncertainties and sort of what this means. And unfortunately, a lot of medical professionals aren't well informed, not well trained to provide information about what life is really like with Down syndrome. There's no national training provided to GPs and health professionals, and Down Syndrome Australia is really trying to push to change that and is asking government to support a national training program to make sure that people are getting the full story and not just the list of things that could go wrong or might go wrong or that are problems.
A lot of mums that I've spoken to who have a child born with Down syndrome say that diagnosis day is the worst day ever, but it's really positive after that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, I would say that's the exact position I find myself in. I felt like Greta's world and my world and our family's future was really sort of tumbling down in those first couple of days. And it was really because I knew nothing about what life was really like with Down syndrome. I had these sort of vague idea that a Down syndrome diagnosis was a tragic thing for a family. I had this sense that our life would be overrun by appointments, therapy sessions. I wondered, would she ever go to school? Would she go to university? Would she have friends? All these things that went through my mind in those initial days. But it was, you know, not long that I started to fill in those huge gaps in my knowledge about what life is really like with Down syndrome. And it's a very, very different story. Families in the know, families who have a child with Down syndrome, and people with Down syndrome themselves will tell you what wonderful, full lives they can live. And it's really not the, I guess what I came to realise pretty quickly, it's not Down syndrome itself that's the problem. It's society's attitude towards Down syndrome and intellectual disability.
You found yourself representing Australia and Greta and your family at the World Down Syndrome Congress, where you met some pretty remarkable people.
Yes, yeah. It was a bit of a last-minute decision to head to Glasgow, and I think it was sort of part of my education, I guess. I was seeing some things flick up on Facebook around that this Congress was coming up. And I just was thinking, I really need to be there. And that feeling just got stronger. So it was only about 6 weeks out. And I sat my husband down and said, don't say no to this straight away. But there's this Congress in Glasgow, and it means that, you know, you're going to have to look after the kids for this time. And I just really want to be there. And it was just a brilliant, brilliant 3 days. It felt like a 3 day long group hug. I sort of walked in. I didn't know anyone. I actually hadn't even met any of the Australian contingent that were there, and there was a decent sized Australian contingent. So I sort of just flew over there on my own. I actually used to live in Glasgow for a while, about 10 years ago, so that felt a little bit familiar, but it was a bit of a leap of faith. And it was interesting because I went over, there were a couple of high profile Down syndrome sort of experts, a pretty well-known US doctor and a woman who has done some amazing work in sort of unpacking how people with Down syndrome learn and developing learning resources to support those needs. So I went over keen to link up with those people. But what I came away with was, and what was sort of strongest for me and most meaningful, was hearing from the real experts, and they were people living with Down syndrome, talking about their lives, talking about their achievements, seeing the young girl playing the violin beautifully, just got back from a scuba diving holiday in Bali, beautiful dancing, people talking about their businesses, but also these wonderful achievements, but also just the absolute ordinariness of their lives, which was to me the most sort of reassuring and beneficial at that point. It was a really great experience.
Definitely when I was younger, children with Down syndrome didn't really stay long at mainstream schools. We really didn't see the limit to what they maybe would have been able to do. Do you think that the acceptance, the early intervention, the support, the way we approach things now, that the limits have changed?
Absolutely. Look, I see it on my Facebook feed every day. I see people with Down syndrome who are dancing and ice skating with grace. They're cheerleaders, rally car drivers, running half marathons, not just one half marathon, three half marathons, graduating from uni, running their own businesses, the falling in love, getting married. And all these things decades ago there would have been limits placed on those. It wouldn't have been expected that people with Down syndrome could achieve those things. And like anyone, to achieve something, you need someone to believe in you. And I think there's that saying, you've got to see it to be it. You need role models as well. So I think of my Greta, and I think of these young adults now who are just living their lives, showing people that this additional chromosome doesn't define in any way what they can achieve or who they can be. It's part of their story. It's not their full story. It'll never be their full story. Just like you wouldn't look at someone with 46 chromosomes and say, oh, well, this means you'll be able to do X, Y, and Z. You can't look at someone with 47 chromosomes and think that defines who they are or describes in any way, really, what they can achieve or who they can be.
So one of the reasons to really speak to you and remind everybody of the celebration that is March the 21st for World Down Syndrome Day, I think overwhelmingly all the interviews I've done for this day have been ones of encouragement, because for many people, having a child with Down syndrome is choice now. The screening will alert you to a possibility of having this baby with an extra chromosome. And I suspect there's a lot of choice made out of fear. Few were sitting there and you had the screening now for your next baby, would your choice be different to what it would have been before Greta?
I think absolutely. I think I just have, you know, an understanding of what that means. I think the vast majority of people who agree to screening, who take part in the screening process, actually don't have, they're not fully informed. The health professionals around them don't have the full picture in order to be able to share that with them. There's a bioethicist from Newfoundland. He has a little boy who has Down syndrome, and he's written a book called Choosing Down Syndrome. And it really delves into the issue of bias against intellectual disability and how that plays out in decision making in relation to prenatal testing. And he believes, and I agree with him, that if people sort of step back and they really thought about the values that are important to them, that those values of, say, acceptance, of empathy, of unconditional love, that they would all be in keeping with welcoming a child with Down syndrome into their lives. So, yeah, I think about those words again, acceptance, empathy, unconditional love, and I think, gee, I think our world could do with a bit more of all three of those things. But I think there's this sort of push towards, so there's new, more sensitive prenatal screening that's becoming more available, certainly becoming more commonly available since my pregnancies. People can find out the chance that their child might have Down syndrome at an earlier stage, at 10 weeks. They can also find out gender. But what I think I worry about, and what the Down syndrome community worries about, is what information is being provided together with those scientific results. There's some interesting research again around the lived experiences of people with Down syndrome. The recent research shows that 99% of the participants with Down syndrome were happy with their lives. And there was a similarly really high level of satisfaction found in families which include a person with Down syndrome. But in Australia, 90% of pregnancies are terminated when Down syndrome is confirmed. So that just makes me wonder, like, they're really interesting statistics to consider together. They're quite incongruent. And it makes me wonder what role stigma and bias and misinformation play in that. And I'm firmly pro-choice, but I believe that choice means informed choice, and families have the right to the full story. If I could just put in a plug for one of Down Syndrome Australia's many advocacy projects at the moment that are on the go ahead of World Down Syndrome Day. There's an online petition, if you go to downsyndrome.org.au, a petition asking the Federal Health Minister, Greg Hunt, for a number of things in relation to prenatal screening. So better guidelines for genetic screening, a national training program for health professionals who deliver the screening services, and better access to counselling both before and after screening, and more broadly a public awareness campaign to tackle the stigma that we know exists still around intellectual disability. So there's a real chance for them to lead the way in advocating for the value of difference.
I also understand that Down Syndrome Australia has got 21 fantastic little videos that they're going to start sharing on social media in the lead up.
Yes, absolutely. So, yes, that countdown is always a highlight to the lead up of World Down Syndrome Day. So you can find those on the Facebook page and the website as well.
And are they as gushy as every other year?
Well, Greta was part of it last year, so maybe not.
How did your boys cope with the diagnosis?
Yeah, so we've been very open from the start with the boys. We sat them down, you know, in those first few days and said, you know, we've been to the doctor, and the doctor has said that Greta has something called mosaic Down syndrome, and it means she'll be able to do everything that other kids can do, but it might take her a little bit longer and she might need a little bit more help. And they, you know, kids are pretty black and white. They were, okay, yep, they didn't seem to be too concerned. They had a couple of questions. Will she be able to talk? And I said, well, you know, she already has some words, and we're going to help her build on that. So we actually started keyword sign to help her language come along, and it's been amazing. Lots of children with Down syndrome are often strong visual learners, so introducing some of those signs just made a massive difference to her expressive and receptive language skills. The other question was, will she be able to ride a bike? And we said, oh, yeah, look, we're confident we'll be able to help her get there. Not that long after her diagnosis, Greta was having a tantrum, and my eldest said, oh, he looked very serious at me, and he said, oh, is that because of the Down syndrome? And I said, no, that's because of being two. They were quite taken by the rareness of the mosaicism. And they did compare her to one of their rare footy cards that they have in their collection. But they have a lovely sibling relationship with her. That she really annoys them sometimes, but that's all part of it. Yeah, my middle boy, when he was a preppy last year, he announced that he wanted to take her in for show and tell. And I was it was not that long after the diagnosis, and I was a bit reticent. I was thinking, oh, is this going to sort of have to be a Down syndrome awareness talk, or what's he got in mind here? And I said to him, oh, so what, you know, what are you going to say about Greta? And he looked at me like, as if you got to ask Mum, that she's cute. And of course, that's how it went. It was nothing about Down syndrome. They played a game, and it was just a very proud big brother showing off his little sister. And it sort of warmed my heart to see all these kids getting to know Greta and knowing that when she starts school in a few years' time, they're going to be her biggest advocates as well.
Elizabeth Callanan, mum to Greta, who has the quite rare mosaic Down syndrome. And if you'd like some more information about the topics that we raised in this interview, particularly getting to know some of the 21 young people featured in the lead up to World Down Syndrome Day, well, Down Syndrome Australia is featuring them on their Facebook page. And you can find it via the link on the Baby Talk website. Just search Baby Talk one word and you should be able to find us. You can listen to this podcast again, but also find heaps of others on our website, like the story we did on De Quervain's tenosynovitis.
When we're holding and carrying our babies, what we should do is use a scoop technique. So rather than just bending at the wrist, which is what a lot of us do when our babies are littler, is what we should do is try and keep our thumb, wrist and elbow in the same line, scoop up underneath our baby and then bend our elbows to pick them up. So you can keep that area of the wrist and thumb in the straight line, so it reduces the amount of strain that's going through that area.
And if you're a bit more adventurous with the ABC Listen app, you can hear this story again and maybe even share it with someone else you think would like to hear it.
Hello, this is Baby Talk.
Please share this podcast because sharing is
there's a new subscribe action as well, which is a little star button on the app as well. And of course, Baby Talk can be found on iTunes every week and wherever you find your favourite podcasts. I'm Penny Johnston and I'll see you next time on Baby Talk.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Digital Radio, wherever you get your podcasts and on the ABC Listen app. Like us on Facebook to find out as soon as a new episode is ready. Just search for ABC Baby Talk.